Inez Lucero versus Garland. And for the petitioner, we have Mr. Lucero. And for the respondent, we have Mr. Wiggers. Thank both of you. The case is set for 10 minutes per side. And if the petitioner wants to make a rebuttal argument, it's best to try to stop before all the time is gone. But if you get in a jam and ask me for some more time, I will give it to you. And of course, if my colleagues, Judge Fletcher or Judge Collins, have questions of you, you should go on with your answers to give full explanation, no matter how much time it takes. So without further ado, let's let Mr. Lucero speak.
Thank you, Judge Gold. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, Richard Lucero appearing for the petitioner, Mr. Balinas Lucero. Your Honors, in this matter, the petitioner applied for cancellation of removal before an immigration judge. The first time before an immigration judge, the judge denied relief because he found that he was not eligible due to several theft crimes he had. He had crimes of moral turpitude. The immigration judge denied relief. It was appealed to the board. The board dismissed it. Subsequent to that, the petitioner filed a motion to withdraw his guilty plea with the state court. That motion was granted, so that essentially vacated all of his theft convictions. In the state court, eventually he was left with one theft conviction where he pleaded guilty. Subsequent to that, he filed another motion with the board, asserting that he was not eligible for relief, and the board remanded it back to the immigration judge a second time for the petitioner to proceed with his cancellation of removal case.
Do you concede
that— Interrupt for just a moment. I want to make sure I understand the narrative. He succeeded in withdrawing his guilty plea to all six counts of the earlier conviction. He was then, in a subsequent proceeding, convicted on one of them after a guilty plea?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And if the convictions that were set aside don't count for immigration purposes, which is a question in front of us, but if they don't count for immigration purposes, he is eligible for consideration of cancellation of removal if that one conviction is a petty offense. Is that where we stand?
Yes, Your Honor. With that one theft conviction, he is eligible to waive that under INA 212A2, which would be a petty offense exception, and it would waive the one crime of moral turpitude.
I got it.
Do you concede that you have the burden of proof to establish that the grounds for the set aside of the prior convictions satisfies the Pickering test?
No, Your Honor. I would assert that under Nath v. Gonzalez, where the facts in that case were strikingly similar to this one, this court held that the Board of Immigration failed in placing the burden on the petitioner to show that the vacature was done based on a substantive or procedural defect. So I would argue in this case, because we're dealing with the vacature only, that the burden would be on the government to show that the—
Was that the case in which the issue of burden arose in the context of a request for relief, or was it in the context of deportability?
No, in that case, it was in the context of deportability. The issue there was whether or not—
But the government has the burden of proof on removability, but you have the burden of proof to establish entitlement to relief, and here the issue is one of relief, so why wouldn't it follow that you have the burden?
Well, I think the issue here has to do more with the vacature. I agree here that the petitioner is applying for a certain relief, and generally speaking, the petitioner does have the burden to show that he's eligible for relief. But I think with this case, we haven't even gotten to the relief stage. We're still trying to determine whether or not the matter was vacated based on procedural or substantive due process or for other reasons. So I would stand on Nath v. Gonzalez for the proposition that when it comes specifically to determining whether or not a crime was vacated based on procedural or substantive defect, that the burden would be imposed on the government.
How do you deal with the Supreme Court's case in Pareda, decided in 2021? Because that seems to cut against your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. I would differentiate that case here. In the Pareda case, we were dealing with the court was dealing with a situation where the petitioner was convicted of a crime under a statute where there were multiple offenses. So there was ambiguity in the statute as to what the whether or not the petitioner was in fact guilty of an offense that would disqualify him for 42B. That's not the case here. So the court in that case held that if there's ambiguity in the record as opposed to with respect to what the petitioner was actually convicted of, it's the burden on the petitioner to show that he was not convicted of a disqualifying crime. Here we're not dealing with that. Here we're only dealing with the issue of vacature and trying to determine whether or not it was vacated again for procedural substantive defect or for some other reason.
I understand it's not directly on point, but sometimes you need to read the Supreme Court's cases beyond the facts to more or less what's stated, and it strikes me that the rationale of the court there, the question in Pareda is eligibility to apply for cancellation of removal as it is here, and the court said in that circumstance, it's a burden is on the petitioner to show eligibility for cancellation of removal. So if I treat it at that level of generality, it sounds as though the burden of proof is on your client. Doesn't mean your client loses, but it does shift the burden.
Yes, Your Honor, and I read the holding a little bit more narrow. Again, I think the holding with Pareda was with respect to a conviction. If it's unclear whether or not he was convicted of a disqualifying conviction.
I understand that. If you're going to distinguish it, I think that's the best you can do.
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. I understand. Generally speaking, it does deal with ambiguity as we have here.
I've got a different question, and that is it appears to me that the BIA did not apply its own case law with respect to Pickering, because as I understand Pickering and then our case law using Pickering, in order for the government to prevail here, it has to show that the earlier conviction was vacated solely on the ground of immigration consequence or for rehabilitative purposes. That was the argument made below, although the BIA rejects the argument, a kind of a compound rejection. But as I look at what the BIA decided, it did not apply the solely on the ground of rationale of Pickering. Do you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor. They did not do that. They kind of skirted around the issue and just basically said that the burden is on the petitioner. But correct, the matter of Pickering basically says that the burden is on the government to show that it was solely vacated on grounds that were substantive or procedural defect. And you are correct. It did not apply that test.
I'm no longer interested in who has the burden. I'm interested in what has to be shown. And the question is whether it has to be shown that it was solely. And as I read the BIA, they did not apply the solely test. They applied some different test.
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Mr. Lucero, if I could interject two simple questions.
Yes.
One is, could you please tell us a little about the crime to which your client did plead guilty? And then second, if you were to get a chance to get withholding relief, what would your client argue are the equities in his favor entitling him to relief?
Yes, Your Honor. The petitioner was convicted of one charge of, it's a misdemeanor, stealing from an elderly person. I don't know too much about the facts of the underlying crime, but he was a waiter at a restaurant and somehow he mishandled tips. And so it was one count of misdemeanor stealing from an elderly person. With respect to equities, he does have qualifying relatives, children who are U.S. citizens, and he has some time here in the United States, so he would argue that his removal from the United States would impose unusual and extreme hardship on his qualifying relatives if he were to be removed from the United States. With respect to the withholding, he does claim he does have fear of returning to Mexico. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to articulate a particular social group, but he does fear returning to Mexico based on the violence in that country.
So in Thank moving you. To set aside the conviction, you relied on Penal Code 1018. As I read the language of that statute, it's pretty broadly worded and would allow a set aside for a wide variety of circumstances. Am I reading that right?
Yes, Justice Collins. It is vaguely worded. I would agree with that, but I would invite the court to look at the motion submitted by the petitioner's attorney at the state level. He did make constitutional arguments in the motion. He stated that he felt that the plea was coerced. He stated that he was not provided with discovery. And more specifically, he made in support of his motion, he cited to the People versus, I believe, Kanaan. In that case, the appellate court found that the defendant's guilty plea was constitutionally defective because he was not advised of the consequences of pleading guilty. So he made several constitutional arguments in his motion to the court, and we would assert that the convictions were vacated based on his constitutional arguments. And I believe my time is up, Your Honors, unless you have any other questions.
If for your planning purposes, I'll give you 2 minutes rebuttal time.
Thank you, Judge Gold.
And if Mr. Wiggers needs an extra 2 minutes, we'll also give him that.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Edward Wiggers for the respondent in this matter. To be eligible for cancellation of removal, petitioner needed to prove in part that he did not have any disqualifying convictions. Thus, he had to prove either that none of his convictions fit the terms of those enumerated in the statute, or that any disqualifying convictions had been vacated for a substantive or procedural defect, and he did not do so.
Can I interrupt you right there? You
Yes, Your
Honor. Reiterated essentially the words used by the BIA. Are you saying that the solely rationale of Pickering doesn't apply?
As far as I don't necessarily know that it's a good fit when it's the respondent, when it's the applicant's burden for relief, Your Honor.
Shifting of the burden doesn't mean that something else has to be proved. It just means who has to prove it.
Right, Your Honor.
And as I read Pickering and our own case law, what has to be proved is that it was not a withdrawal of a plea or removal of the conviction solely for rehabilitative or immigration purposes. Isn't that the test?
Technically, Your Honor, but put another way, which is how the board did it in this case, the question is whether the basis for the vacatur was a substantive or procedural error in the proceeding.
Are you familiar with the Attorney General's decision in Matter of Thomas, which addresses the scope of the Pickering standard from 2019?
I'm not, Your Honor. Not off the top of my head, I'm afraid.
Okay. It would seem to be the latest position of the agency on the subject, and as I read it, it seems to match the standard you describe and does not use the word solely. And so the question is whether or not the conviction was defective. If it was defective, then it would seem that it's bad no matter what the other reasons were. And if it wasn't defective, it would seem that it stands. That seems to be a sensible rule.
Yes, Your Honor, and that really is the point of the agency's understanding of Pickering, is that as the immigration judge discussed in this case, going back and forth with counsel at the hearings, Pickering says that if there's a substantive or procedural defect as the basis for the vacatur, then the conviction does not count for immigration purposes. If, however, the vacatur was for equitable or rehabilitative or immigration reasons, then the conviction still counts for immigration purposes.
What standard of review do we apply in assessing the BIA and the IJ's decision as to what the grounds of the conviction set aside were?
The substantial evidence test, Your Honor.
Why? Why isn't the construction of a court order and the meaning of a court order and what the grounds of a court order are a question of law? I mean, if this were an issue of preclusion and we had to decide what issues were decided by the order and what its preclusive effect is, we wouldn't treat that as a question of fact, would we? It's a question of law.
Your Honor, I think in this specific case, the fact is what was in the decision granting the motion to vacate. And that was simply the declaration that it was granted.
Well, we know the underlying facts. So we know the facts about what happened at the hearing. We know what happened about the papers and what the orders say. But now we have to read, what did the order resolve? And why did it set it aside in light of the record? And that, I don't see why that's not a question of law.
Well, to the extent there are legal questions involved in that, Your Honor, that would naturally be subject to de novo review as questions of law. But the question of the basis for the judge, or for the trial judge's decision on the motion itself, that's a question of historical fact.
But now, even if we were to take it as a question of fact, what's your response to opposing counsel's response to my question about the scope of 1018? The scope of 1018 may be very broad, but the papers that were put in front of the judge, and I'm looking at 291 of the AR, the only question put before the judge is that good cause was shown that a guilty plea may be withdrawn when the plea is entered due to mistake, ignorance, inadvertence, or any other factor that demonstrates an overreaching of the defendant's free and clear judgment. And then it goes on to explain why he didn't make an intelligent, voluntary, and informed decision. So the only ground that's in the motion, it wasn't, oh my gosh, the immigration result is harsh, and you should really spare me that harsh result. It was that this was uncounseled, rushed, and I didn't know what I was doing, and it didn't meet the voluntariness standard. So why isn't it clear from this record that it was set aside for exactly the reasons that even under your own test would say that it doesn't count for immigration purposes?
Because, Your Honor, according to the minutes, and I believe it's at page 298 of the record, petitioner told the court that he did understand. The guilty plea form was translated into Spanish for him.
Well, but that's going, so what, are we going to collaterally review the state court order setting it aside? We're going to say that it was wrong?
No, Your Honor, it's not, the order's not wrong. Because under 1018, the mere fact that petitioner didn't is changing his mind about deciding to go pro se is a basis for granting the motion. That is not, however, a substantive or procedural defect in the proceedings. 1018 also requires that state trial judges to construe its provisions liberally in looking for good cause.
The state court order had said, I find that the conviction, I agree that it was not voluntarily and knowingly, the guilty plea was not voluntarily and knowingly made. Would you lose then, or would we still go behind and look at the original plea record?
I think if the order itself said it, that it was vacating the plea because it was not voluntarily made, then yes, that would be a substantive or procedural defect that would mean that the convictions would not apply. Unfortunately, Your Honor, that's not this case.
Arguing that because he said, I understand, when he was entering the original plea, that that's preclusive, and that he can't thereafter argue, I did not understand? Because that's the argument he makes later, and that appears to be the argument that was accepted by the court that allowed the withdrawal of the plea.
Yes, Your Honor, because he's already represented to the court in the course of his plea proceedings that he understands and he's choosing to go pro se despite the risks of going pro se. And in his motion, which does not include an affidavit from petitioner himself, it's merely counsel's argument. His motion is arguing that he did not completely understand, and now he's in the case of hindsight, it would have been better to have gone with an attorney to try to get a better result. So that is simply him choosing to exercise his right to proceed pro se, which the court could not prohibit him from doing.
But you know, if we talk real world itis and think about the situation this man was in, his degree of education in the law, the circumstances of having been imprisoned, and the statement that if you plead now, you're out of here, for him to say, I understand, is a very different thing from saying he understands in the way that a lawyer would understand. We all know that. And yes, the argument made to set it aside is that he did not understand it to the degree necessary for the plea to have to stick, and the judge allows him to withdraw. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that as far as withdrawing his guilty pleas, which as what happened in the state court. However, for purposes of the immigration laws, he has to show that there was a substantive or procedural error in the underlying proceedings.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. The question is, what did the state court find when it allowed the withdrawal? did the state court allow the withdrawal because it viewed there having had been a mistake or an injustice that required or allowed the withdrawal? Not what he thought, just what the district, what the Superior Court thought when it allowed him to withdraw the plea.
Precisely, Your Honor, and we simply don't know.
So what's what? Well, it's pretty clear what the argument was. The argument was not made to the Superior Court allowing to withdraw the plea because he's been rehabilitated. The argument was not made allowing to withdraw the plea because otherwise he will be deported. The argument was made he should be allowed to withdraw the plea because his will was overborne and he did not properly understand it. Now, I understand we don't have a formal ruling from the Superior Court. But we have the argument that was made to the Superior Court and where the answer that was given.
Your Honor, there's no evidence that his will was actually overborne in light of the fact that he told the court at his initial proceedings that this was what he wanted to do. Now, was it a bad choice? In hindsight, yes. 1018 allows you to go back and correct a bad choice in hindsight. But correcting a bad choice in hindsight is not the same thing as
when you say there's no evidence that his will was overborne, what do you mean by that? The circumstances of the plea strongly suggest that his will was overborne, that he was in a situation where with his limited knowledge of English, his limited knowledge of the law, that his will was overborne. And you may say it's not enough evidence, but I don't think you can say there's no evidence.
Well, Your Honor, if that's evidence that a pro se defendant's will has been overborne by pleading guilty, then no pro se defendant can plead guilty voluntarily.
I'm not sure you took my point. You said there is no evidence. I say there is some evidence. And I just listed it for you. It's circumstantial. You say it's not enough. I don't think you can say there's no evidence.
If I may respond, Your Honor.
Yes, please.
I would say that in the context of the motion that was written, which was focused more on a hindsight view, and the fact that petitioner told the trial court that he understood, the motion, reading the motion to be broader, saying his will was totally overborne and he did not understand what he was doing when he told the court he understood, would not be the proper approach. It's running contrary to what was established in the initial proceeding.
Now, if and I'm not sure what the answer to this is because I'm unfamiliar with matter of Thomas. So this is a hypothetical that Rip Pickering and the Soli test is the operative test. If the operative test is the conviction can be set aside for immigration purposes unless it was set aside solely for immigration purposes or rehabilitation purposes, and if the BIA did not apply that test properly, is the proper solution for us to do a Ventura remand?
Yes, Your Honor.
On the other hand, if the test is as the BIA stated it, because of Thomas, I guess we don't do a remand. We either agree or disagree, correct?
Yes, I would believe so, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And Mr. Wiggers, if you have nothing else that you want to say now, we'll let Mr. Lucero have his rebuttal.
That concludes our presentation, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Lucero, please keep it within 2 minutes.
Thank you, Justice Gold. Just in closing, I would note here that I think an important detail here is, unfortunately for the petitioner, there was no court reporter present when the motion to vacate these convictions were argued. There is correspondence in the record from the petitioner's criminal attorney at the state level who stated that in the County of Orange for misdemeanor hearings, there's no court reporters available. So unfortunately, that's why we don't have a specific reason as to why the state court judge vacated these specific convictions. In addition, there is correspondence in the record, page 293 of the record of proceedings, where the petitioner's counsel at the state court submitted an email to his counsel on immigration purposes stating that the motion to vacate was being submitted based on the Sixth Amendment, violation to the Sixth Amendment of the United States. Now, granted, that's not part of the court record. That's just a correspondence from his attorney. But again, I think that just goes to show that this motion was submitted based on constitutional violations and nothing else. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay, with that, this case, Bob. Bayanas Lucero versus Garland shall now be submitted, and the parties will hear from us in due course. I again want to thank both Mr. Lucero and Mr. Wiggers for appearing to help us out. And thank you again.
Thank you for your time, Your Honors. Thank you.
And that case shall be submitted. We turn to the